I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
On hour number two, we are coming live from our Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans studio. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience on this Friday. NCAA hoops all over the map. Just is what it's all about. And, of course, to help us for the next couple of segments, he's in studio, John Rothstein. As he's following games, frantically says, get in. Mm-hmm. As soon as he walks in the studio, he's like, change the game. I've got to see what's happening with UC Irvine. I don't blame him. I mean, this is UC Irvine is up a deuce here, John. Kansas State. What's going on here?
Make it a five. Not a bad shot. Yeah. Offensive rebound.
Nah, we can't do that play-by-play. Yeah. I mean, I know you don't host shows that much anymore, but don't do that.
John, I talked to Gary Parrish yesterday, and I just asked him, give me an upset. This is the one he picked.
Did he really?
We both picked it.
Yeah, why? What is it about UC Irvine that we are not paying attention to? Because, what were they, fourth in their conference this year?
No, they won 30 games. This was a team that had a culture of winning under Russ Turner. I think similar to Loyola Chicago last year, anytime a team has won at a high level – prior to going to the NCAA tournament, that's usually has a better chance to translate. Now, logically, that would sound like a good formula, but remember, last year, UMBC did not win the America East regular season title and then went on to beat Virginia. So, Tiki, a lot of things exist in college basketball. Logic, not one of them.
It makes a lot of sense. But talking about Virginia, they're down six, and you were watching it right before halftime. Yeah. They drilled a big three-pointer to make it a six-point game. Neither in the last two possessions, neither team scored. So they go in down six. Obviously, I feel this. I'm emotional. I'm too close to it. And Diakite's playing terrible. But what's the psychology of a team that, like Virginia, that loses to UMBC last year, and they're playing Gardner-Webb? Yeah, I know it's kind of a home game for Gardner-Webb because they're so close rather than relative to the University of Virginia. What's the psychology of Tony Bennett's squad right now?
The key in any upset in the NCAA tournament is can you get the favorite to start emotionally cracking? And that is the key. And I thought, like yesterday, for example, Yale was a great offensive team this year in the Ivy League. They lost by five. They were 8 of 37 from three. And Mi Ayoni, their NBA prospect, was 2 of 16. 37. If they're average.
That's amazing. They still won the game.
No. If they're average from three, if they're 12 of 37, they beat LSU by 7 to 8 points.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that, you know, as the game went on, if they could have just made a shot or two, LSU could have began to emotionally crack, and that could have been out. That could have been it. But the key, Tiki, is this, and that's why I think that Virginia surge was so impressive down the stretch, is if it was a 10-point game or a 12-point game, I would give an edge to Gardner-Webb. Virginia's fine right now.
Yeah.
I don't disagree that they're fine, but I see, like, if Virginia, even though they score the ball like they really have never before, they're
this
a much
year.
Better offensive team. Right. We know that. But their calling card, their staple, is still defensively driven by Coach Bennett. I don't like a team like Virginia. I don't see them cracking.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more just I don't know.
Elephant in the room.
I mean, if they were to lose today, I understand what you mean. Like the psychology. Like I guess what I'm saying is, if Virginia was a team that scored 93 a game and they gave up 82.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to me, that's a team that is almost a front, like, can score with the best of them, can drill, you know, 23s and run you out of the gym. But when things get a little tight because they're not defensive-oriented, they kind of lose their way. I would think that of all the teams in the tournament, I would think that Virginia's would be the toughest mentally because of how they play.
But what happened last year has got to creep in. I know that it's 12 months ago, but this is historical stuff right here.
Say to Teak and ask everybody that's listening and watching, say what you asked me when you said it before.
If Gardner-Webb wound up winning this game, forget about college basketball, where would we put it in sports? Like I said to Brandon, I said, the Bills lost four straight Super Bowls, but they went to the Super Bowl. They were a great team. I mean, 12 months ago, a 16 had never beaten a 1. So if not just if a 16 beat a 1 again, but if it was the same team and the same nucleus of players, I mean, this would become a 30 for 30
or
whatever documentary.
A 60 for 30 minutes wouldn't cut it. The odds would be incalculable.
You're right. For a team that this number one seed had risen to number one. They were number one for 33-3.
Yeah,
a couple weeks.
33-3 in the ACC the last 2 years in the regular season.
Well, let's think positively. Let's not start. I need Tiki for the next 2 hours
but
on the show.
But it's out there, so we know what's happening. Look, this there haven't been a ton of upsets this year.
No.
I think a lot of people expected there to be.
Vermont almost got one.
Vermont played, they shot the lights out. Yep, you're
16
right.
16 for 32, I think they were from behind the arc.
You're right. Why do you think that the status quo was holding as opposed to previous seasons where you get the, you know, the 7-12 or whatever it may be upset?
Well, 5-12 Murray upset. State Marquette is different just because Marquette was dominated and really wasn't in the game in the second half.
Yeah.
To have upsets in the NCAA tournament, you need your star players on the mid-major level to play at a high level. That's why I thought that Yale had the best chance because they had an NBA player and he didn't play well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the guy's a great player and had a great player of the year in the Ivy League, you know, a great player, didn't play well. So, you know, one of the best players in the Ivy League, an NBA prospect, but I think that's part of it, Teague. I don't think, you know, you've seen people cash in those opportunities, but there's still some left on the board tonight that I think are interesting, and this is one that's, you know, 17 seconds away right now.
All right, we'll keep an eye on this. John Rothstein's with us in the studio. John, CBS Sports College Basketball Insider, does the same for SI. John's here this segment, next segment as well. Tweets, firemen, at Tiki and Tierney. We could throw them by John. Obviously this was yesterday, but can you somehow try to quantify what the win for Minnesota and more specifically Richard Pitino means for Richard Pitino and his pops, Rick? I mean, that's crazy stuff. Crazy.
I was more happy for Richard Pitino yesterday than I was probably for any coach that I've ever covered in the NCAA tournament, and here's why. I want all of us to think about what it's probably been like for 36 years for Richard Pitino to be Richard Pitino, to be Rick Pitino's son, to be Rick Pitino's assistant, to go through life with all of this, and then all of a sudden you get your proudest moment as a head coach against the school where you once worked that fired your father.
Yeah.
I mean, that is stuff right out of Hollywood. And look, Minnesota played great. Gabe Kalischer played great, but I was happy for Richard Pitino to get that win, setting up the All Big Ten showdown.
Yeah, but John, look at this, though. I mean, I don't know that you're trying to paint it this way, but you make it seem like Richard Pitino grew up in hell. I mean, because Rick Pitino was his dad, every coaching door was open, and he grew up a millionaire. I mean,
Correct. But it's not all about money. It's about living in the shadow of one of the great coaches.
But you get my point.
I get that.
He grew up and it was holy hell.
Yeah, nobody's crying for him. No, but they feel happy.
Hold on a second. I didn't say we should throw a bake sale for him.
It validates his coaching career.
Well, it's beyond that. It's just when you grow up and your father was the coach of the Knicks when he's 40, and that's what the bar is if you want to get into coaching, and you go out and you get your first NCAA tournament win against the school that fired your father.
I got you.
You know, as a human being, you know, I have a human side. I'm very happy for him.
Listen, that's why we love you, John. He comes across as a robot with the info he knows, but he's a human being. He really is.
Yeah, let's hop back to this Marquette-Murray State game. Obviously, John Moran had a ridiculous day. 17 points, 16 assists.
Oh, he took 9 shots, Dickie.
I know.
9 shots.
16, and I think he had a triple-double.
He definitely 11, had a triple-double.
11 rebounds as well. I mean, a lot of people have already given Zion Williamson the number one overall pick in the upcoming NBA draft. Should we second guess this now because of this kid?
I don't think you can second guess it, but I will say this. Because of the importance of point guards in the NBA, because of the importance of that lead guard position, there are, I'm sure, people in the NBA who are legitimately thinking about Ja Morant at the top of the board. And that's something that I think, you know, can't be denied. Now, this is not, I think, a particularly deep draft, but I do think right now you've got 2 to 3 guys at the top of the board that are going to be jewels for, you know, the teams that they're drafted by. There's no doubt about that.
Hey, by the way, UC Irvine, that is final. So number 13-seeded UC Irvine, the Anteaters, first win ever in the NCAA tournament, their second appearance. Last one was back in 2015. They win by 6. They take out Kansas State, who was a 4-seed. So obviously we're bouncing around here. I know you have I heard you talking about this locally the other day on the radio here in New York. I think it was on FAN. I think it was with Joe and Evan. And you were talking about, you know, Bobby Hurley. You predicted the Arizona State to beat St. John's. You were right about that. St. John's played terribly. And obviously you have a juicy matchup with the coaches here with Oates and with Buffalo and with Hurley from Arizona State. John, I was, you know, I didn't realize how, I knew he was good. I didn't realize how physically imposing this young man Dort is.
Yeah.
He's 6'4", he's 220, he's almost like Dwayne Wade. I was told a few people at the arena the other night, if he goes, he's going to go in the first round if he leaves after 1 year. I kind of like Arizona State today. I think you like Buffalo, I think.
No, I like Arizona State.
You do like Arizona State.
Well, here's the thing, BT. I always look for the ceiling. Arizona State has beaten Kansas. Yep. Arizona State has beaten Utah State and Mississippi State. Arizona State has beaten Washington. Now, granted, Washington, to me, is unproven. They'll have a litmus test against Utah State. But I think for the people who followed the Big East, they knew St. John's had players.
No.
Arizona State matched them player for player.
No question.
Dort, Remy Martin, mm-hmm. Tayshaun
Cherry.
And
Remy Martin's not even healthy right now. Yeah. Don't worry about that a little bit.
Tayshaun Cherry. But here's the thing. Last year, Arizona plays Buffalo, round of 64 matchup. Dusan Ristić and DeAndre Ayton are on the floor in a dual big lineup for Arizona. So Buffalo goes small and was able to bring one of the bigs away from the basket and drive around them in the four small lineup. Obviously was too much for Arizona to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Zylan Cheatham changes that.
He's a big boy.
Zylan Cheatham is almost like, and again, he has to perfect the corner jump shot a little bit, but he's got some of that Trevor Ariza-type ability to cover ground defensively. He's the type of
An interesting analogy.
Yeah, he's the type of guy that a lot of people tell me may not get drafted but could make a roster in the NBA. He needs, though, to find that Trevor Ariza-Bruce Bowen corner three, but there's the ability right there defensively to be able to guard 1-4. That could be, I think, the wild card in today's game on defense.
I'll give you another wild card. Then we'll get a break. We'll come back. John, obviously, tee up the rest of the games here. Keep an eye on what's happening. Rob Edwards, who is there, I believe he's their fourth leading scorer, heavy minutes kid. You know, play. They don't have a really deep bench. Four kids play. You know, in the 30-minute vicinity. Rob Edwards. They are, including the aforementioned win over Kansas. When he scores 15 or more, he averages 11. I want to say they're 6-1.
So 13-6 when he scores in double figures.
Oh, look at this guy. I mean, I throw out one stat about the fourth best player on the team.
I'm just
trying
to
add this guy. Look at this guy. I mean, come on.
And he crushes you.
Look at this guy.
I mean, he's just sitting at the top.
Is this guy? Are you kidding me with that? Are you kidding me with that?
I'm just trying to add. That's all.
So basically, the bottom line is this: if Rob Edwards plays well today against Buffalo, pretty good chance Sun Devils will move on. All right, let's get a break here. John's with us for another full segment. You're out of your mind. Good. 855-212-4227. Tweets at Tiki and Tierney. Roll with the hoops. Johnny Rothstein in the house. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
When it's time to make a hire for your small business, you want to find the best person for the job. Odds are that person is on LinkedIn. LinkedIn makes it easy to match with quality candidates who make the most sense for your role. LinkedIn uses knowledge of both hard and soft skills to match you with the people who fit your role the best. People come to LinkedIn every day to learn and advance their careers. So LinkedIn understands what they're interested in and looking for, which means when you use LinkedIn to hire someone, your matches are based on so much more than just a resume. They're based on skills and background, interests, activities, and passions. So you get a group of the most relevant, qualified candidates for your role. That way, you can focus on the candidates you want to spend time talking to and make a quality hire that you're excited about. Customers rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires. Post a job today at linkedin.com/tiki and get $50 off your first job post. That's linkedin.com/tiki, T-I-K-I. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Tiki and Tierney on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, that'll twist up your bracket a little bit. Nice job, UC Irvine. Good stuff, and that's how it sounded. Final call, Westwood 1, NCAA Radio Network. So the Andy, there's moving on. And they will take on the winner of number 512, the 512 game, Wisconsin-Oregon. And, wow, so Kansas State is done. And a little curveball in your bracket. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 855-212-4227, brought to you by GEICO. Great news. There's a quick way to save money. Just switch to GEICO. Go to geico.com. And in 15 minutes, save 15% or more on car insurance. Good for the school. First ever NCAA win. That is terrific. All right, so John Rothstein is still with us. John, of course, CBS Sports College Basketball Insider, does the same for SI. College Hoops Today podcast, all the big-time coaches, always relevant material there, good stuff. All right, so John, we were talking during the break a little bit here, just to get away from the games for a moment, there is a prominent job that is going to be, that's open.
Yep.
That's UCLA. And there was a thought maybe Luke Walton, maybe once he gets fired, not if, but when. What are you hearing? You know, I thought Hopkins would make a little bit of sense, but then we saw the news, you know, he got the 6-year extension from Washington after back-to-back Pac-12 Coach of the Year honors. What does UCLA do here?
It's a great question, Brandon, and I have remained very consistent in this opinion since the job opened when UCLA terminated Steve Alford. UCLA will not get a coach in a good situation in a power conference to leave their job to go work at UCLA. Nobody who is making a comfortable salary in excess of $2 or $2.5 million a year, mm-hmm. with private planes for recruiting, with private planes for road games and so on and so forth, and without the pressure of the bubble that exists inside of UCLA, is going to give up what they have to go to work in Westwood. Now, why do I say that? Look at the last two coaches at UCLA. Ben Hallen, three Final Fours.
Well, that was the guy. He got screwed. Ben Hallen was great.
Well, think about this for a sec. 6 years ago, Ben Hallen gets fired. 6 years ago, UCLA wins the Pac-12 regular season title. They beat Arizona three times. In the semifinals of the Pac-12 tournament, Jordan Adams, who was his best all-around player that year, breaks his foot. They lose in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Ben Hallen gets clipped. Steve Alford, you can say what you want, didn't go far enough in the tournament, went to three Sweet 16s. By UCLA standards, that's not acceptable, but UCLA standards are not really aligned with reality right now. If you want to be a big-time program like Duke, like Kentucky, like Kansas, you have to act like it in all facets of the program from soup to nuts. In between being on the radio over at FAN earlier today and coming here, I made a lot of calls. I was told by somebody directly tied to UCLA that they are likely not close in making a hire. It's March 22nd. You fired Steve Alford, obviously, months ago, and this is the situation you're in right now. I think there's going to be a lot that needs to be played out with UCLA before they find a basketball
coach. Is
that
not a top job anymore?
If the amenities are going to be up to speed, if you're going to get paid between $3 and $3.5 a year, if you're going to have private planes for recruiting, if you're going to charter during road games, it's UCLA. But, Tiki, this is what you got to understand. For somebody who's in a good situation in a power conference job, why would you uproot that?
No, I understand what you're saying. Yeah. It's a great point.
Why would you uproot that?
So
that
for unrealistic expectations.
That Calipari nonsense was nonsense.
Look, here's the bottom line when it comes to John Calipari. This is what you have to remember. He makes $8 or $9 million a year. So even if UCLA were to throw the bank at him, he's getting 10 or 11 from Kentucky with a contract extension. Here's another thing you have to remember. John Calipari hasn't gotten on probably a commercial flight since probably before Memphis. That you're going back like, you know, a long time. And also, the Kentucky assistants need to be compensated if they went to UCLA. Kenny Payne makes close to $1 million. Tony Barbee, who's an assistant coach, probably makes in excess of $500,000. I mean, is UCLA prepared to spend $2 million on the support staff in addition to spending 9 or 10 on the head coach?
I'm going to throw a name out there, and it's off the radar, and it's not even a college coach, and he hasn't coached in a couple of years. It seems, based on the timeline that John just laid out, you're right, it's kind of getting time to losing out on recruits, et cetera. Transfer market's heating up. Mark Jackson. Can they do something unconventional? Can they go for a former NBA player?
I think if they went for a former
I mean, he's a New York guy, but he lives out there.
If they went for a former LA player, I think it would have to have ties to UCLA. That was an NBA player. I don't see that.
Nice.
Okay. Well, we'll see what they do.
Actually, not nice. The Blue Bloods, the big ones, at least in the ACC, Duke and UNC played today. Look, the story has been Zion Williamson all season long. They've been vulnerable, though, at points in this season. Really,
yeah.
Forget the six games that they were without him. Are they as invincible as we want to believe they are?
Yeah, their ceiling is higher than anybody else's ceiling in the NCAA tournament.
Disagree, North Carolina. I disagree.
North Carolina's lost one game at full strength.
Go ahead. Okay.
The Gonzaga. I picked North Carolina to win the national championship, by the way. But here's the thing. The ceiling for Duke, okay, is completely different because their 1, 2, and 3 players are so vastly more talented than everybody else. If Cam Reddish wasn't on Duke and was on another team where he was featured and you ran plays for him, he would be a first-team All-American. Mm. There's no doubt about that. But he's in a different situation right now because he's playing, you know, the third wheel. The difference with Duke is this. If they get punched, and if they're in a scenario where they're in a tight game in the second half, there is no veteran to calm that huddle. There is nobody like there was in 2015 with Quinn Cook or Matt Jones or Emile Jefferson. So that's the thing I'm curious to see.
Isn't that what Coach K is there for?
It's different. You got to have that. You know, you got to have the player.
Yeah.
Well, tell us why you have UNC then. I mean, UNC beat Duke twice without Zion, effectively without Zion because of the 36 seconds in the first game. They lost to him with Zion, albeit by a point, in the ACC semifinals. Why UNC?
UNC, to me, was the story that was kind of swept under the rug at the ACC tournament because they were able to trade blows with Duke at full strength, you know, with Zion Williamson. And they've become a much better defensive team since they were embarrassed at home against Louisville. And the guy right now, and I know he's, for the people who follow the NBA draft, he's obviously well-known and a known commodity. The guy that I think has a chance to really explode over the next couple of weeks is Coby White. Much bigger than Roy Williams' point guards that he's had in years past, like Joel Berry or Ty Lawson or Ray Felton, can really score the basketball. Cam Johnson quietly playing like an All-American caliber player. I think this is the team right now that's playing its best at the right time. And look, you know, college basketball, as we know, is unconventional as to what's going to happen in sports, but I can't imagine what it would be like if North Carolina and Duke played for a national championship.
That would be insanity. That'd be
amazing. I mean, what that would, the buildup, what that would be like.
It would be incredible. By the way, Colgate's up 2 on Tennessee now, and it's in the
really?
Second half. Yeah.
Wow.
11 minutes to go, second half. So Colgate's are the Red Raiders. Are up 52-50. Our buddy Admiral Schofield, who we had on the show, he's got to get going here. There's obviously some time left, but they're losing. And Tiki's Cavs are making a move. They trail Gardner-Webb by a deuce, 38-36. And it's early. Arizona State over Buffalo, 14-11. John Rothstein is with us here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. John, one of our real great insider here at the network, and SI, and that's recently edits the portfolio. So we had him in when Tiki was out. Congrats on that. The podcast, College Hoops Today. John, I hate to actually talk coaches, get to games, and go back to coaches, but I neglected to ask you this. Is there a coach currently coaching who you think might still be coaching for his remaining tenure at the school that he's still coaching for?
He's coaching for his job.
Right now. Is there a coach that's in the tournament right now that if he gets bounced early could get fired?
I don't see that right now.
Okay.
Not if they're in the NCAA tournament. No.
Okay. Okay. Do you know the answer to this? Because I always find it interesting, you know, whether it's if Colgate was to win or, sorry, Teak, if Gardner-Webb is to win, or now Virginia's tied it up 38
apiece. About to take the lead.
Yep. Got an N1 coming up. Yeah,
they're
fine. I told you they win by 12 or 15. They'll handle this game. But how much money, like the infusion of funds to a low-rated seed that you know, even if you just win one game, what does that do for not so much the profile, because
question.
You have to then... Do you
question.
Know economically what
question.
That does?
Yeah, I don't have the specifics, but, you know, the bonuses just for coaches themselves are crazy. Like, coaches and coaching staffs get bonuses for making the NCAA tournament
and
winning
the,
a game.
Even the small squads, say, like Gardner-Webb.
It has to be.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
But I think I read somewhere like Leonard Hamilton or... I
love him on the sideline.
He's 70. He looks like 54.
And what do you say?
Black don't crack.
What did I say? That's what he came up the other day. You were out. I said, if Tiki was here, he'd say black don't crack. And, of course, Tiki's here, and that's what he said.
So
he looks great.
Yeah, no, he looks sensational. But, yeah, I think, you know, you win an NCAA tournament game, you get like $50,000.
Are you worried? Yeah, and that could be on the lower end for some. Are you worried? I mentioned Vermont yesterday before they hit, I think it was 16 out of 32. There's so many stats in our heads now, but I think it was 50% from behind the arc. And I believe Vermont has their best player coming back next season, which obviously bodes well for the Catamounts. But is that kind of an anomaly, or is that a weak point? Like Florida State's three-point defense moving forward, was Vermont, quote-unquote, lucky, or is that something the Seminoles have to worry about?
You know, Florida State was, and I talked to Leonard Hamilton this morning about this, they're coming off playing all those games consecutively in the ACC tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Takes a toll. There's a carryover, and then you're playing Thursday afternoon after, you know, playing Saturday night against Duke, Friday against Virginia, Thursday in an overtime game against Virginia Tech. There was a lot on that, playing three games in 3 days. So, no, I think this is a team that will get better as the NCAA tournament goes along. And I think the difference is how Ja Morant was able to carve up that Marquette defense yesterday. When somebody gets switched on him tomorrow, it's going to be a high level athlete.
Yeah.
How about that left-handed pass he threw, though?
Oh, ridiculous.
One more. He looked like Russell Westbrook.
I know. One more coaching question. There's a rumor a couple days ago that Buzz Williams could be leaving Tech and heading to Texas A&M. You heard anything on this?
I've heard all sorts of that. I mean, obviously, we're going to have to wait and see what happens when Virginia Tech is eliminated. They could be playing for a long time in this NCAA tournament. So, you know, we'll have more for that, you know, throughout the coverage here during the NCAA tournament, and then we'll see how far Virginia Tech goes, because they have a team with Justin Robinson back that can get to the second weekend and do some damage. But, yeah, we'll have all that moving forward.
What about Bama? Only because I ask you, because Avery Johnson's a big name. We all know him from the NBA, NBA pedigree. That's one of those unique jobs where it was a unique hire, And I thought it was a pretty proactive hire, but there's some rumblings that, you know, that could be over too.
Yeah,
what do you think?
I've been told that by end of business today, an official parting of the ways is expected.
Mm. Really?
Yeah. So I mean, that was what that's what the two sides were working towards.
Yeah,
that,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know, that it could be done by end of business on Friday. You know, I don't think anybody expects that he returns as Alabama's head coach. It's interesting to me though. You know, two things. Coaches right now, and we saw this with Bryce Drew being fired earlier today at Vanderbilt. 10 years ago, you got 4 years, and maybe you got a fifth if you did things the right way. Now, things are being expedited.
Yeah.
2, 3, 4 years if you're not obviously, winning at a high level. Like Bryce Drew goes to the NCAA tournament his first year, almost wins a game, loses to Northwestern. I was down at a Vanderbilt practice in the preseason. They had a guy in Darius Garland who wasn't going to be Trae Young, but he could have been this year's Trae Young. Like, he could have averaged 17, 18 points and maybe 7 or 8 assists.
Okay.
And he was out with a knee injury. He missed the entire season.
He tore something? Okay.
So, like, that was their guy.
Yeah.
And they don't play with him. They don't win an SEC tournament game. And then he gets fired. Like, it's just.
Was he a freshman?
He was a freshman. He was a five-star player
from
Nashville.
You don't win one game, though. I'm not saying the kid wasn't going to be good.
I mean, but
you went winless in the conference.
It could have been this year's Trae Young.
Okay, but even without Trae Young, they won a playoff game. They won a tournament game today by 23 points.
I get it.
Without
Trae Young. I'm just saying 3 years to me is a little bit premature. And like Marvin Menzies at UNLV, Shakur Justin, first-team All-Mountain West player, averaged 15 and 10, doesn't play. You still win 17 games. And what I think happens is, and you're seeing this by how really extended these searches get, these ADs make a change, and then all of a sudden, the process drags on, and it drags on further because they don't have a candidate.
John Rothstein, he's on the money as always, John. Good hopping in, buddy. Is your neck okay? Been bouncing back? I mean, like rubber neck. There's an axe on the side every 2 seconds.
I mean, Tennessee is playing badly right now.
Virginia's starting to get going, though, up by four. What is it?
See you Monday. This is March.
We will see you, John. He's got to get that in. John Rothstein, follow him on Twitter. And CBS Sports College Basketball Insider, SA College Hoops Today podcast. John is moving on to his next, like the car wash. Where are you going now? What do you have now, TV?
Back to CBS Sports Network. Back to the studio.
Nice. We love the studio. Say hi to everybody back there for us. We'll get the update from ACC. Obviously, things are fluid. Tennessee is in peril, we think. Let's see what ACC has to say. ACC, what do you got?
This is Tiki and Tierney on CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, that is how it sounded. Westwood 1, NCAA Radio. So the Norse of Northern Kentucky got to dance a little bit, but now it's up to the big boys to move on. With all due respect, the Red Raiders, they get it. 27-6, win number 27 for Texas Tech. So they move on, and they will take on the winner of the Arizona State-Buffalo matchup. Now, it's funny because Arizona State came out flying to this game, and then I looked, I went to get a little water during the commercial, and Buffalo had jumped up by 9 or 10. So, obviously, we're bouncing around. I don't know exactly what kind of run, like a 13-2 run, 14, is it, whatever it might. But it looked like Buffalo ripped off a bunch of points, and now Buffalo leads Bobby Hurley's Sun Devil. So, we'll keep an eye on that.
And I talked to Nate Oates yesterday, who's the head coach of SUNY Buffalo.
Yep.
And, obviously, he worked for Bobby Hurley. Picky found him out of high school, out in Detroit, Michigan. They became really close friends. Yep. I remember a couple of days ago, BT, or maybe it was last week, we talked about how, and John Rothstein hit it with Minnesota and Richard Pitino. By the way, Virginia's up by 11 now.
But they just showed Ralph Sampson munching on popcorn in the stands.
But like the storyline of Richard Pitino having to play against his father's old squad at Louisville and this like just ridiculous,
devious ways of the NCAA.
The same thing kind of happens with the play-in game that St. John's played against ASU, having to face now Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cool like backstory, but it's hell on the coaches.
It is.
Because they're best friends.
It's tough.
Right?
Well, here's the thing, too, because even St. John's moniker, like their hashtag on – look, we have one of the posters in our studio.
Yeah, we are New York's team, yeah.
Yeah, it's not on camera, but it's actually by the door. It's the team that we are New York's team, and Syracuse has battled for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. If St. John's would have beaten Arizona State, they would have been playing against Buffalo. Buffalo – they think they're New York's team, so they had. Well, if you play Arizona State, you'll have to have that old rivalry, the best friend coaches. If you play St. John's, you'll battle for the moniker of who's really. I mean,
New York's team.
That's what they do, and I think it's great. I think it adds extra intrigue, but I do think it is tough on the coaches. But they're paid a lot of money, and you got to deal with it.
I agree.
Your friends after the game. You know, I mean, it's not life or death. For 40 minutes, it might seem like that, but you can still maintain a great friendship and a great respect. You just got to grind through it. All right, Teek, you ready to grind through football at the 40s?
Yeah, there's some good stories out here.
Yeah, there are. Let's go.
40-yard kick, right hash mark.
40 yards on the return.
A 40-yard touchdown.
40 yards.
You love football. We love football. So we give you football every day. It's Football at the 40 with Tiki and Tierney on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, this was an interesting here. So one of the more interesting proposals for 2019 with the Rules Committee, the competition committee amongst the league's 32 teams, came from the Eagles, who seem to be getting a little tired of the NFL's annual tradition of having the Cowboys and the Lions play at home every year. Basically, the Eagles propose that they would like to see the two teams hit the road once in a while. And in the resolution that was change, that was submitted to the NFL, the Eagles proposed that the NFL make the tweak to Turkey Day and either have the Cowboys or the Lions play on the road instead of at home.
Is there something tactical here? I mean, I guess there is, but I like the tradition of this. There's something just familiar about it. It's the turkey leg and all the nonsense that happens up in Detroit and down in Dallas. And It's akin to like Notre Dame playing on NBC every week, right? Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that just is. Could it change? Of course. Does it need to? I don't think necessarily.
I don't think it needs to. You know, obviously, Cowboys are in the family. My wife's from Dallas, the whole crew. I worked in Detroit. I was at the first Thanksgiving Day game at Ford Field and one at the old Pontiac Silverdome when I worked there. I was there 2 years. I went to both games. And it's awesome. So I'm not going to get on the radio and TV and start, you know, vamping for change. I'm cool with the way it is because both teams kind of mean a little something to me in different ways. However, from a competitive point of view, think about this. It's a little disadvantage to the other teams in the NFC East now because you've got that prolonged stretch after it where they get a chance to regroup for the stretch run.
That's a great point.
And it's the end of the season.
You're right.
I mean, it's not like it's September where you've got where attrition's going to settle throughout the rest of the NFL. The Cowboys have 5-6 extra days off. That's a big advantage.
Yeah, on week 14 or whatever it is, or week 12 or so.
As you get ready to move into December.
Right.
So I get it. I don't think it will happen, but I understand why it seems petty. I don't think it's as petty as some people have made it out to be. All right, how about this possible replay back to the competition committee? Now, they proposed two versions of a modified expansion of instant replay.
Mm-hmm. Here we go.
Get the sundial out. That's going to take 9 hours for these games. According to documents released Thursday night, both call for a one-year trial before any permanent decisions are implemented, obviously. But the first proposal would add fouls for pass interference to the list of reviewable plays. That's one thing. Let's first get your reaction to that.
Well, here's just because they add things that can be reviewed doesn't mean that coaches are going to get like three or four reviews. You still only have two, right? So it's like, it's going to be one play or maybe two plays out of the game that we're talking about. And it's up to the coach to save his
gotta
reviews
be judicious
for the right moment, right? Like Sean Payton, if he had used his reviews on a spot at the beginning of the NFC Championship game or the second half of the championship game, and that pass interference happens, he doesn't have a review.
True.
That's on him.
That's true.
Right? So I think we're overreacting to the fact that it's reviewable. Coaches still have to judiciously review the right plays. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. I'm just thinking about this like in practical terms, like real live viewing in the moment experiences. From the coaching point of view, you're 100% right. Tiki nailed it. But think about this. And this has nothing to do necessarily with gambling or fantasy, but just imagine the flow of your fandom on a Sunday, right? You're bouncing around. You got the red zone. It's a game you don't have money on. No real fantasy element. Say you're watching it doesn't matter who you're watching.
The Bills and the Saints.
The Bills and the Saints. And there's a 76-yard touchdown reception. And you know what? You're into it. Wow, what a play. Oh, what a great throw. Josh Allen just flung it 57 yards into the wind. Wow, what a play. The Bills. And then there's a little, as they're going for the ball, the receiver, whomever it might be, gets a little separation, kind of, you know, arm bar, does something to disengage.
I hear you.
Literally, it's a penalty. Uh-oh. I mean, it just causes a lot of potential grief. I guess it's about getting it right, but I want people to understand, if you do this, it's going to change Sundays a little bit. But the second, by the way, before we move on, would include fouls for pass interference, but it would also add the fouls for roughing the passer and unnecessary hits against a defenseless receiver. To me, that seems more viable because it's more of a safety element, personally,
I
would think.
Okay. I would agree with you.
Okay, sure. Just checking.
Get to the next one.
I know. I hear you. That's why I'm like, got it. Justin Houston, Colts. I was kind of hoping my Jets would get with him. He's a young 20. He's an old 29.
Yeah.
Has a lot of injuries. Obviously, a terrific career with the Kansas City Chiefs. The Colts have had a lot of money, and they've done not a whole lot here during the offseason.
Nothing.
Actually, nothing, to be nice. I was trying to be kind. They haven't done a whole lot. Jeez, They've done nothing.
They got $100 million. Spend a little bit.
They got a little bit going out of Justin Houston. What do you think? Is he still playing situations?
Yeah, look, he can. He's 29 years old. He's an old 29 because he's been battling injuries, like serious injuries, for the last 4 years, BT. But last year was impressive. In 12 games, he had 9 sacks. And more importantly, he had 5 forced fumbles. So that means his impact on contact is significant. And can he make a difference for this Colts team? Absolutely. Darius Leonard, who was the defensive rookie of the year last year, they were a force to be reckoned with on that side of the ball. Oh, and by the way, Andrew Luck's a beast.
Oh, so, good to have him back, boy.
Great. I think it's a great signing.
I like it, too. By the way, during the 2018 season, Houston had the 9 sacks. You talk about the 5 fumbles, but he's tallied 52 sacks over the past 5 years, which ranks 7th. So nobody's saying he's Von Miller. Nobody's saying he's somebody like that. But, you know, you have your A-list superstars. You have your you know, B plus kind of vying for that next. He's right now. He's probably in the vicinity of a B to a B minus, but he's pretty good.
And think about that number. He missed like at least 8 games over the last couple of years. So
that's right, ruptured Achilles, right?
Yeah, you're right.
Okay. How about this? Go to Hawaii. All right, the Cowboys and the Rams are going to be saying aloha a couple times here. Aloha. Two teams announced on Thursday they've agreed to play a preseason game in Hawaii. What will you get accomplished in Hawaii?
Other than listening to some Don Ho.
What are you going to do? I mean, you got to actually be aware of your football job at this point?
I actually love this for the players because they get I'm sure they'll be there for a week.
Uh-huh.
But more importantly, if this is a precursor to bringing the Pro Bowl back to Hawaii, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
I'm all for it.
It's not working where it is now at Orlando.
No, not at all.
A couple times. This was a monsoon, and I believe it rained the year before that, too.
Yes.
Orlando's had, 3 years?
And at least two, but maybe three.
At least two, maybe three. I think it's three. And I know twice the weather's been really inclement, which is terrible.
Yeah.
But this would be nice if this was a little foreshadow of moving it back to...
They don't just do this for, like... Hey, we're going to go to Hawaii.
Yeah. Let's throw him a bone because we took it away.
There's something happening here. So
always planting and checking the seeds of viability.
Yep.
And by the way, the community in Hawaii, I'm not saying that they don't embrace it in Orlando. I'm not saying that at all. Trust me. But, I mean, it's a cornerstone of the Hawaiian sporting scene.
No doubt.
So we'll see if it comes to fruition. Hopefully it does. C.J. Anderson had a pretty interesting take. We all know that Todd Gurley got hurt late last season. C.J. Anderson came off the street. And right now, he's still basically being, at least the way he frames it, disrespected the way he's been for the most part in his career. He wrote this quote on Twitter. The disrespect is real, is what it is. It's the same story over and over. All I want is a full opportunity to play 16, goes on. But that's the meat of the quote here. His only season when he played 16, he had over 1,000 yards. You know, I mean, with all due respect to C.J. Anderson, I mean, who was ready somehow to play despite being, at least to the untrained eye, very out of shape. I mean, if he's a feature back, that's not good for your team.
No.
He can't be somebody's number one.
C.J. Anderson is being, I'll put this in his quotes, disrespected by the Rams because they have Malcolm Brown, who's from Texas, and they love the kid. He broke his clavicle, and that's why he missed the end of the season, and they had to sign C.J. Anderson. He's a good player. But he's not your marquee guy at 28, maybe, years old. And having bounced around a little bit, it is what it is with him. He's going to maybe sign on somewhere, but he's not the guy. Yeah, he is 28 years old.
28, there you go.
That was Football at the 40 with Kiki and Tierney on CBS Sports Radio.
You know, I wanted to drop this in as well. RG3 signs a 2-year deal with the Ravens to remain on their team.
I think that's
great. I think it's great for the Ravens. I don't know if it's that good for RG3.
No, it's not.
He's not going to play.
Look, he's not going to be a starter again, but I think it's great for him because he fits the same system that they're going to try to implement with Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. And he maybe can give him some advice. Get down, kid. Yeah. Don't take that shot. Not necessary.
Yeah, I think from the Ravens' point of view, and I think in terms of, you know, that insulation for Lamar in the quarterback room, et cetera, schematically, you don't have to vary things up too much at all. It's kind of the same skill set for the most part. Check, 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 I agree. But if I'm RG3, I want a chance to play.
Yeah, I agree.
I'd kick the tires on Miami, see what's going on there. I mean, I want to play.
He might be a trade candidate at some point if teams can't figure out their quarterback position. Miami, by the way, I think they're
looking at just tank.
Full like
oh yeah
tank mode.
Yeah,
right
they're
now.
Thinking Tua.
By the way, Virginia is toying with Gardner Webb right now, up by 17.
I told you
with 6 minutes left. You said they would by 12. They're gonna be like 22.
I said 12-15. I did say 12.
I think
to
you
15.
Might be right.
Hey, listen, you got burned last year. I can understand.
Maybe not.
Oh, here we go. 62-48. By the way, we've got another hour of the radio show. Of course, 3 hours every day, but we will finish up here on the TV side. So TV's going to say goodbye to us in about 30 seconds or so.
Yep. You got March. The Frozen Four. Frozen Four, college hockey.
Oh, it's the Frozen Four.
The Frozen Four.
Nice.
College hockey is next.
Wow.
On CBS Sports Network.
I'll give you 2 points if you know two teams who's in it. Just start throwing good guesses out.
I'm going to say
BU. Is BU playing?
I was going to say that. Michigan?
One of the Ivies? Michigan might be.
Michigan's got it.
I'll throw St. Cloud State as a wild card.
Ooh.
I like that one. The Frozen Four is next. Teek and I still on TV. Teek and I still on the radio. Third hour coming up.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.